Hello, and welcome to yet another episode of My Dog Will Eat My Face. This week, I wanted to discuss, I guess it's two different things, but one turned out to more or less be a non-event. So I'm just going to include it in the introduction. And both these events actually came about through a nurse visit with my hospice team. Technically, it was with two different nurses. One I had never met before, and one being my usual nurse, I suppose. The meeting with the one that I had never met before was simply for the fact that I was visited with an acute infection of some sort. So that's just the unfortunate truth, that even though I'm in end-stage heart failure or whatever other ailment you might imagine, I can still just get plain old sick like anyone else. And that's exactly what happened, but they threw some antibiotics at me and I'm feeling a little bit better, so it's just like everyone else. But the reason why I wanted to bring up that visit was because I found that some of my dialogue with this nurse, who had also never obviously met me before, to be quite interesting. And that's the majority of what I intend to share today. Now, my meeting with my usual nurse was unfortunately somewhat indicative of advancing progression to my heart condition worsening over time. And she had basically heard rather consistently 1 week a pretty pronounced arrhythmia in my pulse, and a very low pulse for me as well, which is interesting. But we decided to kind of sit and wait for a week and see what happens. And I guess the good news is the following week, the arrhythmia could no longer be heard and the pulse more or less returned to normal. So kind of a weird little freak out moment that I was originally going to talk about if it turned into something big. But since it went away, it's probably just one of those cases of me improving on some days, making some days better, and then there's some days where it's just worse. So, that being said, that's really the entirety of my visit with my regular nurse. But the visit with the nurse who was new to me and I was new to her was actually quite interesting. She said some pretty insightful things that made me very introspective. because she had said some things that, to be quite honest, I haven't heard anybody really say before. And I wanted to kind of talk about that and share that through this week's podcast. So, having the worsening health condition kind of sliding backwards to where it was to the previous week, I'm not going to talk any more about that now. And instead, I'd just rather focus on the dialogue with that new nurse that made some interesting observations, as best as I could tell. So with all that being said, that's my goal today, is to really share some of her observations and, she actually asked some very difficult questions, to be honest. Because, and they weren't difficult, like I couldn't answer them. I struggled with being able to answer them in a succinctive way. But perhaps today I can try to do that. And, see where it goes. So that's what I'll try to focus on this week in today's podcast. So when this nurse first visited me, we were, of course, as I already stated, total strangers, because it was over the weekend and in the middle of the night where I basically needed some medical care because I could tell there was an infection coming on. So, that being said, she eventually showed up to my building, and because it's a very secure building, I had to basically take the elevator down from the top floor to the bottom floor and walk out and escort her physically into the building and, you know, get her clearance to enter, because it was the middle of the night and the regular people that clear people into the building or block them from entering the building are no longer working, and basically everything's locked up. So unless you're a resident, you're not getting in. So I've got to physically go down and let her in, because I live in a big apartment building. So anyway, so I had to run downstairs, let her in, and then take her up to the top floor to where my place is. One of the things she said first off was something like, "Well, you certainly are very chipper." And I don't know if I ever had a nurse call me that. And I was kind of taken aback, and I said, "What do you mean?" And she's like, "Well, most of my patients aren't running out of their place and going outside of the street to let somebody in the building, and you're moving around a lot and doing things." I'm like, "Oh, I see what you're saying. I'm kind of uppity for someone who's been told he's only got months to live at best. And she goes, right. I know, it is very morbid and a little macabre, but that's really what she meant. Most of her patients were, oh gosh, you know, down now, probably twice my age, probably, very, very lethargic, if moving at all. A lot of them might be in care facilities, things like that. And that's just the nature of the hospice business, right? It's not common, I guess, and I can see what she meant then. It's not common for the patient themselves to go down all these floors to the street and buzz you in, sort of, and escort you up to the top floor to gain entry, you know, and be moving around and all that. So once she had explained that, yeah, it's quite unusual for someone who is basically in hospice, and I can certainly believe that, and that's why I clarified it with such macabre language, I guess, because it is what it is. But anyway. And I said, oh, I see what you mean. And yeah, I guess I'm kind of weird compared to a lot of the other patients. I do a lot of stuff. I move around. You know, I'm absolutely certain I laugh every single day of my life. If I were a betting man, I would bet $1 million that I don't have, but I would bet $1 million that I am laughing every single day of my life nowadays. So, I don't think I was ever, well, I don't want to say in absolutes. I don't think I was frequently in that state before hospice, to be honest. But for the last year or two, I have, I would bet that I'd laughed every single day. And that doesn't have actually anything to do with necessarily me. I didn't get into this with the nurse, but, you know, I'll share it here, but the reason why I say that is because I adopted my latest dog, and it is impossible to go through a day sad, depressed, scared, whatever, and not feel better, and also to not laugh, because you can do some of the silliest things. I just start thinking about it when I start giggling. So I really don't think lately I've gone for a day without laughing. And that's absolutely wonderful and amazing. To be in that state at the end of life. I mean, I would think that would only be because your brain's failing and you're deranged, which might be so. It did happen for a little bit, several months ago. I had an episode that still is not really well explained. But, yeah. I wouldn't normally expect that either. So, I guess, you know, for her being a nurse in this business, she kind of saw how I acted and my lifestyle and translated it to, "You sure are chipper." So, I think that's fair. I think that's a fair statement for her to make. Just because of how I deal with my day-to-day life. But I actually took it even a step further and said, yeah, and not only do I tend to move around a lot and do things, you know, I don't just sit in bed all day. There are some days where I'm kind of like that. That's absolutely true. And I don't love those days. I feel really lousy when I feel like I can't get out of bed. But some days are better than others still. And I put those in those really bad days categories where I just feel really fatigued and just can't seem to get out of bed and stay out of bed. So that does happen, frankly. But still, even with that said, I move around a lot more and do things a lot more than most of the other people in this situation. And as I was beginning to say, I took it in a step further and said, yeah, and I am completely at peace in my mind with my own mortality. I am completely at peace with the possibility of dying tomorrow. Or tonight, or sooner, you know, I'm okay with it. I don't fear it, and I don't lament it. And then she said, "Whoa, wait a minute, now you gotta tell me how you came to that." How did you get to that conclusion? And I said, quite honestly, That is a very big question that I could not come to answer myself, but for over the course of months of just visceral introspection. And she more or less conceded that. She said, yeah, I guess you'd have to come to that sort of conclusion. But I really didn't have any elevator pitch or short way of saying how I came to that. And that is an evolution that actually occurred through the course of me doing this very podcast. When I first started, I could not say that I was at peace with my own mortality. Absolutely not. But eventually, through the introspection that I had done over the years, I could absolutely find myself at that conclusion. And so for me, it was months of evolution, of addressing how I feel, of that introspection, to get to that point. And yeah, if you want to listen to about a year's worth of podcasts or more, probably, you could probably find out how I came to that point. So I kind of left it at that with her. It's like, you know, I don't have the short answer. I can only give you the extraordinarily long answer that neither of us have the time for, because I'm sick. But in your spare time, if you have it, listen to the podcast from the very beginning and move forward, and you will go through it with me on how I came to that conclusion. And so if you're someone who's relatively new to this podcast, it is actually beneficial to start, I think, at the very, 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 very beginning. The quality is going to be worse. It's not going to be as better as it is, you know, as later seasons, I suppose. But you'll see that it was a very long process. And the only other thing that I could tell her is, well, the best recommendation I could have for anyone is journaling. Because this podcast for me is me journaling. It's journaling my thoughts down. Most of the time I pick a topic, it's something that's on my mind, and then I enter it with no script. And hopefully come to a point to where I solve whatever was bothering me or was on my mind or answered whatever question I had internally. So it's 99% unscripted. It might be one or two words of what I wish to talk about written down, but that's it. That is it. And so this podcast has been my answer to that. You don't have to journal with the old pen and paper. You can, of course. You can journal a million different ways. You can paint. You could sing. You can do a podcast. You could do a million things that help you to be introspective enough to make a difference to how you see yourself and how you see the world. And so that was the only other thing I could tell her was journaling. And that is my biggest recommendation above all. Journal. Keep a journal. And I think the vast majority of mental health professionals would say that is absolutely correct. Journaling has been shown to improve and help mental development and mental trauma, because you start to address those things and introspect with those things. And despite all the medications, all the therapists out there, and how good they could be, if you're not asking yourself honestly these things, then you're not going to get anywhere, probably. And journaling is just a great way to do that, to ask you those questions and to overcome those things. So that's the end of the podcast. I'm kidding. No, that's not the end. I decided that I will try today. I'm laughing because I'll probably fail. I will try today to give a sort of Cliff Notes version of how I came to peace with death. Because that's the number one question I think I get. And not just from people who come across the podcast, it's from people in my day-to-day life. They most often ask me how I came to peace with death. And I've only been able to say, oh my God, go through a year's worth of episodes and maybe you'll find it. It's in there. It's a process. It's a long process. There's no quick answer. And still, I doubt it's going to be a quick answer. But today I'm going to try to see if I can't answer that here today. And I don't know. A few minutes. Less than an hour, at least. Hopefully, less than half an hour. Hopefully in one segment. Like 15 minutes, 20 minutes. So, hang on tight. Because I'm going to try to do that on this next segment. If you got some tea, you want to, you know, try out and have ready to sip on as you listen to this, pause it here, go do that, and then come back. Actually, that's a good idea. I'm going to do that right now. And then I'm going to come back and try and probably fail to answer that question in a succinct, small, brief way. So here we go. All right. As I'm back, well settled here, I will try to answer this nurse's question as much as I can, and let's say about quarter an hour, 20 minutes or so. And incidentally, quick sidebar, I know I just talked about tea a second ago. That's another little known fact about me. And something I also really enjoy is I'm a big tea connoisseur. I've got two whole cabinets in my kitchen filled with not just various loose leaf teas, but ways to brew them. I've got a Brown Betty's and strainers and all that stuff. And when I make tea at home, 9 times out of 10, it's home brewed through like a Brown Betty and then strained. It's loose leaf. And so I'm a big fan of the various teas, their flavors, the different types of teas out there. And, that's another fun little hobby of mine. I don't think I ever mentioned. So. And it continues, to this day, even in hospice. Yay. So I'm enjoying that part of my life still to this day. And it's good to have those kinds of hobbies. So, anyway, back to my attempt to answer this question of how I am at peace with death. and or how am I at peace with my own mortality? The quickest answer I could say is that I know, after a lot of previous introspection, when I look back on my life, I've had a very, very full life. It has been a crazy roller coaster ride with a loose chicken on my lap and I don't know, a fresh piping hot Starbucks Americano in my hand that I couldn't spill, or something horrible like that. Anyway, it's been a ride. That's what I mean by full life, by the way. It doesn't mean it's been all good. Of course not. A lot of times it is the turbulence, the animosity, the troubles, the despair, the depravity in our lives that lead up to us developing our greatest strengths and character. And even my most favorite author in the world, Christopher Hitchens, said that the time of near despair is not often met with surrender, but rather raising courage to overcome. And he wrote that, and he knew what he was talking about because he wrote it in his very final book. It's literally just titled Mortality. And he wrote it basically as he was dying of throat cancer and left it unfinished. And it was published by his wife after he had already passed. So he knew what he was talking about. And that's what I'm talking about here when I say a full life. It doesn't just mean good times. Because of what I just said, the troubles, the problems in life often lead to your true character. And bravery. And it will help you to build upon that character and that bravery. So, I know for a fact, just through introspection, that I have had a full life. Very good. And very bad have both occurred. Honestly, I would say lots of very good and lots of bad. I don't know if I have any very bad. Maybe a couple sprinkles of very bad here and there, but not a lot. I mean, I'm just being honest. I didn't have too many horrible events in my life. My God, compare that to the entire population of the European continent in the 1940s. How arrogant would I be to say, oh yeah, I can relate to that. My God, no, I cannot. No, I can't. That's a real hard life. So I really am reluctant to even say I haven't had any tremendous hardship, to be totally frank. Maybe touches here and there, but certainly not a big bowl of soup of travesty. You know what I mean? Just a little peppered in here and there. So, again, that's just me being honest with myself. I mean, again, just look at the people in Europe in the 1940s. There's this little thing going on called World War II, and I'm sorry. In the United States, they're called, the people who lived at the time were called the greatest generation for a reason. And they didn't even live in Europe. They lived in Nebraska or Los Angeles or Brooklyn. And they went there to do it, you know? But think about the people who lived there. My God. You know, that's just one event off the top of my head. I could think of 19 others off the top of my head that are way worse than any experience I've ever had many times over. So, yes, I've had a full life with a lot of bad, I guess, but honestly, it's just not been that bad. I'm just being bored. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent. I gotta stop that. So, the best thing about knowing that you've had a full life is that it's something that has occurred in the past. And whatever has occurred in the past is something that can never be stopped or taken away from you. No power in heaven or hell, no plight of the universe can ever take away what has had happened. Ever. It is like a bell, as people often say. Once you ring it, you can't unring a bell. And that's key. That's key to why having a full life is something that I can, to some degree, less rest some laurels on. And never worry about what happens next, because yesterday and today, I lived my life best I could. And as I already stated, it is those challenges that you encounter that really refine you and turn you into the person you are. And hopefully turns you into the person you want to be. So you even become thankful, not just for the things that go your way, but thankful for even the trials and tribulations. Because if those were taken away, you might not be who you are today. You may not have a certain courage, a certain knowledge, a certain empathy, a lot of possibilities. you do have today, and you probably have a few things like that that if you parted with, you would be an entirely different person and missing those good qualities that came out of that adversity. And that's why when I did my Thanksgiving podcast, I said, you need to be thankful not just for the good, but also the calamities in life. Because they have made you, hopefully, a better human being. At least I know they have in my case. Maybe you went completely nuts and murdered your whole family. That's happened. That's absolutely happened. But, thankfully, not me. Hopefully not you. And instead, you came out of it with better understanding of the human experience in this world. And with that comes tremendous empathy and character that could not ever be earned through any other means. And you would not find the alternative of being a person lacking that as something acceptable. Actually, to even drive this point a little bit further home, and that is that even adversity is something to be thankful for if you look at it the right way. I am going to cheat. I know I said I never have a script, but technically I still don't have a script, but it reminded me of something that I wrote when I was in Orlando jail. And for those of you new to the podcast, I was never in jail, for crying out loud. Go back, listen to the Orlando Jail podcast, and you'll get it. Anyway, when I was in Orlando Jail, they had a word of the day in these group meetings to where you were supposed to meditate on the meaning of the word. And if you can't meditate, which is my case, I can't just sit still. It's just me. You could write about it. And so I was like, oh, yeah, I could do that. Yeah, great, I can write. And so I composed my interpretation of these single words when I was there. And it produced this vast, enormous collection of writings where I basically had, I think they gave like 10 minutes to meditate or write on that word. And they picked the word. So obviously it was challenging. I'd have to think about something that maybe I've never thought about before. Or something that I thought was entirely stupid. But that was the word they picked, so here we go. I actually kept, though, everything I wrote from my time there. And there was a particular day where it somewhat echoes what I stated already with respect to using calamity or adversity, whatever it might be, to make of yourself a better person. And that actually is integrity. It's a word they chose for us to meditate and write about if we don't want to meditate. But it really struck home with me in a different way. And I was reminded of it because it somewhat reflects what I had just stated regarding even the bad things are things that you can be thankful for because they made you who you are today. And losing those bad things would probably actually make you, frankly, worse of a person. So I'm cheating because I remembered that one day when they had the word of the day thing, it was integrity, and I went through my little journal from Orlando jail, and I found it because what I wrote in that journal, with respect to that word, really reflects that similar mode of thought. And I think integrity, as I discuss it here, in this old writing that I did, is actually another component to being able to answer that question as to why am I at peace with death. And I could say, well, I have experienced integrity in my life. When challenged and in difficult points of my life, in my daily life, I had to show integrity. And it doesn't mean something as simple as you might be thinking it is right now. Maybe a few of you might think, oh, that's a deep thought, actually. But it's you who are thinking that it's a deeper thought or more closer to the truth than not. But I just thought of this, and I'm basically breaking my own rules because I'm going to read to you what I wrote all those years ago. So that's how I'm cheating. But I'm only doing so because it came to mind as a good deviation from what I just said with respect to having those bad events in your life. So without further ado here, let me jump into it. Again, I only had 10 minutes to think about it and write, so it's literally just like one page. So don't worry, you don't have to have your eyes glossed over and wonder if you brought a carry-on bag to this, but no, it's short enough. Anyway, integrity. When considering integrity, I ponder not just the concepts of honesty or truthfulness, but rather the concept of being whole, or solid, or reliable. This underscores the fact that integrity is not just the result of a singular act, but it is rather a state of being, a process with no terminus. When I consider my recent past, I note how my general character suffered. I was not intact, nor whole, nor solid. The reasons for these states were many, and it'd be lazy to attribute this to mere dishonesty. My sense of oneself was crumbling. My virtues of loyalty, courage, reliability, rationality, and honesty all suffered. Ergo, my integrity, my wholeness, suffered and collapsed. One must therefore not think of integrity as a single act, nor even a primary state. It is a process, exercised without rest, and is the secondary state derived from the strength of one's virtues practiced each and every day. It is the refined metal of the ore extracted from daily life. So, I think to be at peace with one's mortality is a similar situation to integrity itself. It's not the end of a journey. It's not a place you get to and rest. It's something you have to exercise every day. And that can be a difficult thing for many, but I say actually not so much. If you're living on this planet Earth and interacting with other human beings, you are in the greatest thunderdome for this sort of thing there is. When you deal with how many people that have no problem giving you adversity or insulting you or tearing you down or your plans change, anything, you know, anything can happen. I think, in fact, just being alive puts you in a place where you mesh perfectly anything that requires daily exercise just by virtue of the fact of you living here on Earth. And by no means is that an insult, you know, but it's just the truth, just the way it is. So I don't think it's something that's that difficult, frankly. When you look at it the right way, you're going to go through this every day, whether you like it or not. The only thing that matters is how you handle it. So, that brings up another point. It's very important to be aware of those things that are unchangeable or are otherwise unmovable, and those that are changeable and movable. For example, I can't change someone else's opinion of me. I can't. I've experienced it many times where people just meet me and they immediately think I am like the love child between Hitler and Stalin for some reason. Within 10 seconds, boom, they've decided they don't like me. This happens to all of us, I think, but it certainly happened to me. Maybe I'm just a complete jerk and just don't realize it. But no, I think that's pretty common, okay? So, I can't change that. That's got to be something I remember. It's very important I remember that. I cannot change people making rash and silly decisions or having ridiculous opinions about me. Because I can't change their mind and how their brain works. The only thing I can change is my reaction to it, how I perceive it for what it is. It's my perception that I can change, and my actions that I can change. That's something I have tremendous influence over. But unfortunately, there's a lot of other things. Obviously, I don't have any influence over. But you can't tear yourself down and be just, I'm trying to think of the right word. You can't be humbled or torn down or demoralized or any of those things because of things that are completely out of your control. When a hurricane hits, you don't punch yourself in the nose. There. That's the best analogy I could say. But you can go to Home Depot or Lowe's and get the appropriate wood and boards and nails to hammer up the windows and protect your home and make sure your insurance policies are all still paid for and active and before you evacuate, if you evacuate, might want to take any of those reference documents with you, just in case. You know, there's things you can do to minimize that hurricane hitting you. But just sitting there and punching yourself in the face is really not going to do anything. That's something you really have to understand. And I struggle with that. I admit it. I struggle with that a lot. People make me angry a lot more than I should let them. I let them live in my head free of rent way too often. And I admit it. It's a challenge for me. But what did I just say integrity is? It's something that doesn't ever go away. So I'm going to try to not do something stupid like that and try to see it for what it is and continue to do so. Sometimes I'm sure I'll get it wrong. But all I can do is keep trying. That's never going to go away. That's just part of life. But, yes. Knowing what you can and cannot change is integral to being at peace with really anything. And truth being told, I guarantee you, dear listener, you will die. You will absolutely die. That is one of those things that you cannot escape from. What do you do about it? Lock your door, sit in the corner, terrified to go outside. No. You do things, of course, to protect yourself. Get the appropriate insurance for things so some things aren't catastrophic. Learn how to behave and act in public. I know a lot of people would struggle with just that. You do the things you can do, the things you can control, and live your life to the best of your ability. In my high school graduation, I know I've said this story before, but it applies here. The valedictorian, whatever. I had to give a speech at the end. And I remember she said that she learned in high school that worrying about things is like trying to solve an algebra problem by chewing gum. And that stuck with me for the rest of my life. Because worrying doesn't do anything. It just doesn't do anything. Now, you could become aware of a danger or a threat and take appropriate precautions to handle that. Of course, do that, yes. But don't just worry about it. That's not going to do anything. So I think being aware of what is in your influence and what is not is key to peace of any sort that might enter your mind. So I would venture to say that is a big part of coming to peace with your own demise. Because, let's face it, nothing you can do about it. It's gonna happen. The only question is, what do you do about that? What do you do about the fact that your life on this rock is limited? Finally, one aspect I'm going to say that brought me to peace with death, my own, I should say, not others. Sorry, I better make that distinction. Sorry, bad joke. The other thing that's brought me peace is how everything I do, as I've already stated, is not movable. It is unchangeable. So, in a way, everything I do and say on this planet is immortal. It echoes for an eternity. What you do in life will echo for all of time. Even if you think you're a lowly whatever, you might tell yourself, I'm just a bookkeeper. I'm just, I don't know, a plumber, whatever. But everything you do matters. Your impact on others matters. Your trade, however you earn a living, matters. You don't have to be a big hero or general or something crazy like that for it to matter. I guarantee you that. Have you ever hired a lousy vendor to do a job? You come to hate them like more than anything in the world, more than Satan himself. I've been there. But then you get somebody else who comes in and is amazing at what they do, and it's just like, God, you just want to hug them. It matters what you do. It matters what you say. For example, when I was in hospice, my mother passed away. It was very, very sad, of course. I was very close to her. But when she passed, did all the things she did for me as a mother also go away? No, of course not. Did my love for her go away? No, absolutely not. She will always be my mother. I'll have no other mother. And that is completely unchangeable. And the things she has done for me, I remember. Those are unchangeable. Even if I die, the fact that she was here and doing positive things to others, to me, to her other children, perhaps to strangers, were her impact that will never go away. Nothing in heaven or hell or in the universe can take away that which has already occurred. So, everything we do, everything we say, I think, matters. You are never off the clock when you're alive. If you do something horrible, you, frankly, have always done something horrible. The only thing you can do is try to mitigate it or do something to help those who suffered from your hand. But you cannot reverse it. You cannot make it a thing that never happened, as much as you might like to. Believe you me, I've got plenty of things I've done that I wish I could erase from ever happening. But that's just not an option, is it? It's not. And that proves my point. It's not an option because you can't change what you did, no matter how small or how big. It will have been done the way you did it, said the way you said it, forever and ever and ever. So, to me, first of all, I don't really ever worry about immortality because, in a way, everything we do will echo into eternity. Maybe your name will never be remembered, but the fact that you were here and you did certain things cannot be undone. It doesn't matter if people know your name or not. What only matters is what you did. If you want to be famous, fine. That's a different goal altogether. But if you truly want to to be immortal, let's say, you got it. Everything you do can never be undone. No matter what. Not even by centuries of other generations forgetting your name and what you did. You still did it. It never can be undone. You might say it doesn't matter anymore, though. Maybe. Maybe not. That's the problem. The simplest of actions can be a domino effect that lead to profound changes in the universe. And for that reason, I think, at least, we all should be very careful in what we say and in what we do. Because once you realize it can never be undone, it will be there forever and ever. You better behave accordingly. You don't want to be a negative, terrible plight in humanity's history. Even if you were and no one knew who you were, you're still that plight, that problem. But if you strive to do the right thing and be a good person and maybe have a good influence on things, even, again, if no one remembers you, you still did those good things. And that's as close as any one of us is going to get to immortality. And that's why what we do matters so much. I don't have to say behave as though everything you do will last forever. Because, fortunately or unfortunately, everything you do does last forever. This is not a game. This is not a scenario. This is not a dry run. You're doing it right now. You're in the mix. So you better play your cards right. At least do your best. You have been given the chance. So, I think with all that said, I managed to, as best I could, best I could, Describe how I came to peace with death in the shortest possible version. I'm certain I'm leaving a lot of things out. But at least I got the meat of it. I think I got most of it in there, the most important aspects in there. Unfortunately, though, still the best way to know the answer to that is to go back an hour by hour, day by day, just follow how the evolution of my mind changed. And that's still the best way to answer that question of how I became at peace with death. But here, I try to at least provide some sort of a succinct answer in a single podcast. Now, if you were to ask me to give you an elevator pitch that answers that question, just not gonna happen. actually, maybe I could do it in one word. One word. Because there is actually one commonality to every single thing I shared here. And one thing that I think is extraordinarily important to being at peace with anything. Big, small, death, mortality, or your golf handicap, whatever, you know, whatever you have to be at peace with. And in one word, it is introspection. That's it. That's how you get there, I think. Lots and lots of introspection. You might get there and do that and come to some different conclusion that's maybe closer to reality than mine. I don't know. But you won't know either if you don't at least do that. The key component to all of this, for sure, is introspection. And that's why, again, I strongly encourage journaling. And so, too, do many mental health professionals. I think that's really a good thing to do. Obviously. I think it's something that only brings about benefit. So, with all that being said, I am going to go ahead and wrap up this podcast for this week. Hopefully speak to you all again soon. Please, please, please click on follow the podcast and turn on notifications so you are notified of future podcasts. If you also wish to support it, you can go to the Spotify website of the podcast and select support, or go to patreon.com/mydogwilleatmyface, and you can support it that way for as little as $1 a month, and it makes a difference. So that's it for now, and auf Wiedersehen.